When a problem occurs or a failure happens, or even if as a customer, something's not quite right with the product that you're trying to use, say your cell phone doesn't power up, we probably intuitively conduct a bit of failure analysis. We might not even call it. We might call it troubleshooting, for the lack of a better word. So if my phone doesn't power up, I may plug it in, see if it has depleted its battery and needed charging, or I'll double or try depressing the power button. If possible, I'll find an alternate way to provide power to it, or to alternate way to invoke its screen to turn it on. But by a series of experience and plus some understanding of how it should work, we can probably figure out what would cause it not to power up. In some cases, it's beyond our abilities as a consumer, and that may prompt a phone call to the organization that has supplied us the parts or the system to get some assistance in the troubleshooting process. In some regards, though, we're going to end up with a failure analysis where we're trying to extract as much information as possible from those failures. Now, from customers' point of views, I just want to get the problem remedied, and if I can find a way to do it myself, it saves me time versus having to go bring in some other people, explain the symptoms to them, and go through some more troubleshooting steps to hopefully resolve the problem. But once we get a product back from the field, or we have it in a repair center, or it's in development, it's one of our prototypes, in each case, we have a chance to learn quite a bit about the failure and what the failure can tell us. The more information we have about the circumstances surrounding the failure is a good start. But the basic idea here is that we're trying to get it down to what exactly happened. What was the root cause, is what we commonly call it, is what was the fundamental chemistry or physics or software line of code that was an error, that or was a weakness, that wasn't able to withstand the stresses or the situation and led to a product failure. And so our process of doing failure analysis is benefited by having a rigorous process, by having a set of steps that helps us to understand the basic flow and objectives of each of the failure analysis process. All too often, if you bring a failure into a laboratory with a handful of engineers, they'll quickly run through a set of common troubleshooting techniques, and then what we call jump to conclusions about what the fixes are. So as engineers, we enjoy fixing problems and using our experience to hypothesize of what would be the most likely thing to fail and what would be the appropriate remedy for it. Now, that may work in some cases, and it actually works and reinforces our inclination to do that. But it's also just an experiment. In many cases, we want to affect a change over our entire product line. In those cases, we want to be really sure that we're actually solving the appropriate problem and the appropriate cause of that problem in order for it to be an effective change. And so one technique of this is called 8 Disciplines of Problem Solving, or 8D for short. And it's a pretty basic step-by-step or logical system to go through doing failure analysis. And the root cause step is really only one part of that. But for those important problems that need solving, or the major field escalations or the showstoppers during your product development process, are the ones that we really want to take our time and get it right so that we don't have to repeat the problem-solving process again in the future. And so as we identify a problem, and we talked about this in a previous lesson, there's a bit of containment and collecting of information and kind of the crime scene details. You know, what were the circumstances, what were the events leading to the failure, and so on. But the basic idea is that we want to gather as much information as we can. And on the other hand, we also want to make sure that the product and the people around it are in a safe situation, that I remember a phone call to AAA, and got myself locked out of a car. And their first question was, are you in a safe place? Now, that didn't cross my mind, because I was, but it was the first priority that if you have a broken down vehicle in a, on say a freeway, you want to make sure that you're on the phone in a place where you're not worried about being run over by a vehicle coming down the road. And so the first step is really, are you safe? And then second, what are the symptoms? What's the situation around what caused this failure? And the more we can collect there, oftentimes that gives us clues for the next few steps. So the first step is really, well, who needs to be involved? Let's put our team together as who needs to be involved in possibly solving this problem. Now, if it's a significant effort and a major problem that needs solving, it may involve people from across the organization. But a typical team in these is a handful of people and more is needed as the program continues. Oftentimes, it might be two or three people. But the idea is that the folks being assigned are given time to devote energy to solving this particular problem. Now, these problems aren't always assigned a team. It has to be a big enough problem to warrant redirecting people's efforts. But when you do, it's worth getting the problem-solving technique down and get it right. So the next step is really then describe the problem or define the problem. So what happened and what was the significance of that? And what were the causes of that? How far can we get with a five whys type of approach? What is and is not? That is, what was considered part of the contribution to the problem and what is not a contributor to the problem? What were the symptoms that we saw and what were they like? What were other situations or symptoms that we've seen before? But the end result is to have a very clear and crisp description of the problem. This will help us to understand exactly what is the failure and how do we measure it and detect it when it occurs or doesn't occur. Step three is that containment piece, is how many other parts are involved? How many other models are involved? If it was noticed on a production line, well, does it include all of the production from that day or from that shift or just from that hour? When did we last check and what's the nature of the problem and how many units could it affect? Would this imply a complete product recall or just a couple of units from the production line at this particular moment? So doing a bit of due diligence here and being a bit cautious helps you to avoid having to track down these parts when they get further away from your control. The root cause analysis is just one step in the problem-solving process, and that's really that nuts and bolts of exactly what happened. What's the underlying physics or chemistry or line of code that creates the scenario or situation that causes the problem? Now, we can explore and poke and prod and do a bunch of hypothetical work. Part of it is a careful inspection, whether through microscopes or scanning electron microscopes or through other non-destructive or destructive evaluation techniques. But we want to understand exactly what would cause the symptoms that we saw. Now, it may be there's multiple causes for that, so it may take some experimentation to find out which ones are likely to occur and which ones are not. And then it's, can we turn this problem on and off? Do we understand it well enough that we can create the problem and manifest it and then make a change and so that the problem goes away? Now, if it's process related, a good technique is the process flow diagram. It's map out this process and each of the elements and contributors possibly to where the symptoms we finally saw. So from the failure analysis and getting a good understanding of it, we often then figure out a way to, at least an hypothesis, to make a corrective action. It might be a change in the material or in process or in the design. But the basic idea is that will it effectively make the change? Is the root cause analysis understanding well enough and the experimental work we did at that stage sufficient for us to actually implement a change? But we also need to step back and understand what this change may impact in other performance parameters of the product or of its overall safety or performance. So instead of just focusing in on one narrow part of the problem, and making that change to solve that one problem, have we inadvertently caused other problems? And do we have enough control of this thing? Is it gone through the vetting process to make sure that, if it's a new vendor or a new process step, that it's possible to do in a sustained and controlled way? And as we implement these changes, let's keep monitoring and check to see if it's actually working or not. And then we continue to implement and validate the solution. So that problem may have occurred and may only affect, one batch of products that we created over a short period of time. But step back and look at, what caused that problem, and could it occur again? Or could it occur on different lines? Or can we generalize it? And this scenario manifest itself to cause problems in other areas? And what can we learn from that and then implement those changes or improvements so that we avoid the problems from occurring in other parts of our system? Step 7 is that prevention part. And so is further expanding that corrective action and maybe building it into design guidelines or into derating formulas and checklists, maybe building it into design reviews so that we maintain awareness of this type of problem and building it into our knowledge management system so that we can avoid making the same series of mistakes in the future. Last step, according to the 8D, eight disciplines process, is closure. Let's finish that program and actually celebrate it. It might be impromptu and rather quick, or it may be formal with a larger program or process. But it's also part of the process is to make sure that the people that spent time solving a problem are duly recognized, as rather than the heroes of jumping to a conclusion that happened to mitigate some failures, is that this group actually did the due diligence to determine the root causes and actually solve the problem and has the evidence to show it. So let's celebrate and reward the folks that actually make a systemic change for improvement for your products. Now, 8D process is just one of any number of different ways of going about this, but it's a common one and it has the core of the steps that most any of these failure analysis type systems would have. Now, one of the things I've run into in my experience is that if you send a failed power supply back to the vendor, you rarely are going to find out exactly what happened. It's not that they don't know about failure analysis or the eight disciplines approach, is that it's usually not in their interest to find you the problem and solve it for you. That may seem counterintuitive, and many of organizations do try to work to improve their programs and products for you. But the failure analysis part over the last, 10, 15 years has really deteriorated in many suppliers' organizations. And so there's a bit of prioritization, a bit of we've seen this already, a bit of we don't really know how you're using the product in your application, and those kinds of things, so that it usually takes longer and generally doesn't give you good information. Now, of course, there's exceptions, but in general, if you have a failed component and you've isolated it to a particular system, there's two things to consider. One, that system might have been the victim. Something else may have failed that caused that component to fail. So if I have a bad analog ASIC, it may have overdriven the power supply until it failed. So identifying the power supply as the smoking components on it as the source of the failure is incorrect. So separating it and sending it back to the power supply vendor, the only thing they can tell you is that it failed. It had too much current, or it was too much demand was placed on it, or some other anomaly occurred and caused it to overheat and fail. Sending them the entire board is also tricky because they don't know your product as well as you do. They may not have the schematics or the test equipment in order to evaluate a product to understand how other parts of the system could cause a power supply to fail. So working internally with your own failure analysis capabilities, and then with an outside lab, a trusted source that you have under contract, helps you to identify and solve these problems and do true root cause analysis much, much quicker. And in the end of the day, isn't that what we really want? Is we want to understand what the real problem is as quick as possible. And so my advice is, if you have a failure, don't isolate the part and send it back to a vendor. It's usually time consuming, and they probably won't have the capability to really understand the problem. So whether it's a victim or it's just the time nature of your problem, sending it to isolating a component and sending it to the vendor is usually a fruitless experience. In the next section, we'll take a look at FRACAS, Failure Reporting, Analysis, and Corrective Action System. I think I added an "and" in there someplace.